Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Cambridge and Heritage Financial are not affiliated. Welcome back to Making Money Fun. I am John Jagay, joined again by Shanna Tinter from Heritage Financial. Great to be back with you, Shanna.
Oh, it's great to be back.
So on the podcast today, we're going to be a little self-deprecating and talk about some dumb investment moves. And you've told me offline that you've certainly made mistakes when it comes to investing or not investing, because we all have.
Yep.
So what was the idea behind our conversation today, and what prompted you to want to talk about your own investment mistakes?
Yeah, so in the midst of this pandemic, John, I've just heard so many times from both clients and folks that haven't yet become clients that they've made really bad decisions, either in the last 3 months regarding selling investments when they shouldn't have, or buying investments that they thought made sense because their brother-in-law said they would be a good investment. And I realize that we in our industry don't often talk about the times where we invested in something we shouldn't have or didn't invest, as it is in my case, and something we should have. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about that today, because we can't change the past, as I often tell folks, but we can only make better educated decisions as we move forward and
learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, learn from those mistakes. And I hope that our conversation today helps people do that.
Yeah, I think about many, as I'm turning 40 this year, and I think back over the last 40 years and all the mistakes that I've made. Financially, not financially. I was known pretty well in college for being the one to always stick my foot in my mouth when saying something that I felt that needed to be said that really didn't need to be said. So there are a number of things that we can look back on in our lives about money. And especially, we've talked about this before, where money is such an emotional thing. People really do beat themselves up over bad financial decisions. And they're oftentimes, I think, a lot harder on themselves than they should be.
They really are. And one thing that I wanted to just make sure that I mentioned is I don't care if you have $1,000 in your retirement, $100,000, $1 million, or $10 million. I hear the exact same thing from each person. And that is that they don't feel like they've done enough to save for retirement. And I think that with our social media and our media today that's out there, they do a pretty good job of making us all feel like we haven't done enough. And so every one of us could probably do more and should probably do more, but we can only do what we can do. And so that's really what I wanted to talk about today, is to really try to take that emotional reaction and the fear-based reaction out of the conversation and really just try to think about money a little bit more logically and a little bit from a numbers perspective. Because for those folks that are thinking about getting in right now because the market is on sale, like we've mentioned in previous podcasts, or they really want to start to learn about investing and think that maybe while they're on furlough because of COVID-19, it might be a good time to do it. It's hard to divorce or remove that excitement and fear from investing. And that's sort of really more of what I wanted to talk about today.
You talk about social media. That strikes me too, because people don't look in real life the way they look in their pictures on Instagram. And that is so true when it comes to money as well. It's not often that people are going to, with a few exceptions, of course, but it's not often that people are going to go on and talk about how much money they don't have. They're going to post pictures of the new car, the new boat, whatever it is. And it really creates this kind of false narrative, not to get too deep into the psychology here, but I'm sure you'll agree with me, where people look like they have a lot more than they have, and they look like they're a lot more successful than they are, because they're always putting their best image forward on social media. And there's this keeping up with the Joneses effect when you're scrolling through your feed that isn't really accurate.
Yeah, we don't know the full story, right? And so to illustrate this point, I'll never forget when I was looking where in Arizona I wanted to set up my practice 10 years ago. And a lot of folks that were friends of mine from the Midwest didn't know much about the Phoenix area, but they knew that Scottsdale was where the money is.
That's a nice suburb, yeah.
Yeah, right. And it is a nice suburb. It's where I lived the first year that I lived here. In Scottsdale, the money is very visible. You can see it, right? In the cars, in the houses, in the purses, in the jewelry. But the suburb where I live out in Gilbert actually per capita has more wealth. You just don't see it because—
Really?
Yep. With some exceptions, we don't drive fancy cars. We don't live in super expensive houses, but per capita, there is more wealth out where I live than there is in Scottsdale. And so looks can be very deceiving.
So what you're saying is you're enjoying working with some of these clients that are making smart financial decisions and not blowing all their money on houses and cars.
Exactly. And mortgaging themselves up to the hilt, right? Like that's what we often see with people that wear their wealth outwardly, is that the car is leased and the house is mortgaged and they've got more money coming in and going out in each month than they should. And it isn't always the case, but I see it a lot. And so just really making those good decisions and learning from the mistakes is super important.
Yeah. So people will come into your office and they feel bad after they've made a, I don't want to say a dumb decision, but just an honest mistake.
Yeah.
When it comes to their money. What does that look like?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my mistake.
Okay.
And I hear some things that folks tell me that are similar to this one. So mine was not listening to my husband, who, God bless him, really has always been into technology and has always been in IT in the consulting space. And we got married 15 years ago. September 18th will be our 15th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And one of the very first gifts that he gave me was a digital music recorder that is known by an initial, and it was a brick back then, right? It was very large, and I could not fathom why I needed this digital music recorder because I had a CD Discman. You remember those?
Oh yeah, the Discman that if you were running or went over a bump in the car,
That was exactly it. I had this Discman. I thought that was good enough. And the amount of money the first generation of this digital music recorder and player cost was insane. But it was one of the first gifts that he ever bought me. And I was really underwhelmed by this gift. Like, really. I'm like, I don't understand what this is going to do, how this is going to change my life. It didn't.
I mean, it could have been worse. He could have got you a Zune.
Right? Yeah, no kidding. It did not impress me. And he was disappointed that it did not impress me. And at that time, we were talking about investing and we were fairly newly dating. Mm-hmm. And he told me I should invest in the stock of the company that made this digital music recorder and player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying really hard not to say the company, by the way, so my compliance department won't get all over my case. But I think all of probably what I'm referring to. And at that time, this particular company stock was selling around $40, $50 a share.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I laughed at him. I thought he was crazy. And I told him he would be crazy to invest in it because nobody is going to want to carry around a music player that they have to plug into their computer to move music around when you have CDs.
Right.
Like nobody's going to want to do that.
this is, again, just to calibrate here, this is early, mid 2000s. This is happening, right?
Totally.
Okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which at the time was not a crazy way to look at it.
Yeah, it wasn't a crazy way to look at it. And he listened and acquiesced, and him and I both bought some different stocks that we don't own anymore. But oh my God, I wish I had listened.
If you had bought that stock in that company.
Wow.
If you had taken a bite of that company and bought some stock.
I know, right? Eventually, I bought it, right, about 5 years after that initial conversation, when every device in our household was made by that company, right? At this point, I think we have 2 tablets, 2 phones, 3 or 4 laptops, and a desktop at my office that is all made by that company. So now, looking at it, I could kick myself for not at least just throwing a little bit of what I was investing into that mix. But I can't unring the bell.
Yeah.
And today I still own some stock in that company. But boy, I wish I'd have bought it when he said that I should.
You would have got it for a lot less. But and it's understandable how you would have regrets over not buying a company that has gotten so big and ubiquitous like the one that we're talking about.
Yes.
But if you're a client walking into your office, or I'm you and you're the client, and you walk in and say, oh, I can't believe I didn't buy the stock in XYZ company.
Yep.
As an advisor, what do you say to somebody like that?
Well, you can't go back and buy it, right? So in the way I looked at it is if it was a good company then, it will always be a good company until they make decisions that prove to me otherwise. So
right.
I eventually bought it. And a lot of my clients own it. And a lot of my clients own it in their mutual funds that they own with me as well. And so no matter the price, it's still a good company to buy. You might just not be able to buy as many shares.
Yeah.
Or you might be able to consider buying a fractional share. That's a thing now. I'm not sure if you're even aware of that phenomenon, but there's a lot of folks in our industry talking about that. There are several platforms that are out there where you can just buy a piece of a stock that is valued for far more. And that allows people that don't have as much money to be able to get into investing in stocks when they maybe couldn't have in the past.
I like that idea a lot. Something else I wanted to ask you about today, Shanna, was apps like Robinhood. It's something that I'm big into podcasts. I hear them advertising on podcasts a lot. And there's a real push for socially responsible companies to be involved with, especially as everything we've witnessed in the country over the last couple of months. Tell me about Robinhood and what the issues are there.
Yeah, for sure. So I think anything that educates people that want to learn about investing is a great thing. I am not one of those advisors that says that everybody should only be investing through me. I really believe in education, and I think some of these apps that are out there that allow folks to do it in a responsible way are a fun and really cool thing for them to be able to do. I have clients that actually invest in addition to working with me using some of those apps. So
okay.
I think that's a really good thing. Where I think you've got to be careful, and I've said this for decades, and I'm going to say it again here, is investing in things you don't understand. Some of these apps allow you to do that, and it can be super scary with terrible, terrible, terrible consequences.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm not really sure about this, but I'm just going to pull the trigger and hold my breath.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these apps really gamify it too, right? Like you'll press a button to buy a fractional share and you'll see like the dollar and cent signs on the screen. And yeah, it really makes it kind of fun, but that...
It's like playing a slot machine. It's not real money.
Yeah, but it is. And that's the problem. There was a story in the news that was sort of overshadowed by all the coronavirus pandemic where a 20-year-old customer of Robinhood invested a little bit of his money, and he invested in some strategies that I don't even use, even though I understand them.
Okay.
And I'm licensed to do it. He invested using options. And an option at its base definition is something where you can buy or sell what's called futures. And so it feels sort of like funny money because you are able to buy stocks and other types of instruments at a spread. He used something called a bull put spread, which I'm not going to get into in a lot of detail because it's super confusing. But when that happens, there's sort of a lag time between both of the transactions that make up that one transaction. And what ended up happening was that the Robinhood platform showed, even though it wasn't true, it looked like he had lost $730,000. So he saw a $700,000+ negative number.
Oh my gosh.
And took his own life.
Oh.
And it's heartbreaking to think about that.
Yeah.
And the reason why we know this was a factor, we don't know that it was the whole story, but the reason why we know this was a factor was that he left a note that said he didn't understand how a 20-year-old college student could borrow essentially $750,000 on margin. Like, why would they have allowed that? So super scary. And what they're saying, even though they can't comment specifically on this case,
sure,
Robinhood is saying that it was essentially a systems glitch that made it look as if he had lost $730,000.
And this kid ended up taking his own life.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
Terrifying, heartbreaking for his family. And it simply was because he did not understand what he was doing that this was allowed to continue. And so please, if you're going to use any of those apps or do any investing on your own, start simple, start with basic stocks and mutual funds and educate yourself. And then if you want to get into some more complicated derivatives or currencies or anything like that, that's when I implore you to work with an advisor that really understands how these things work and, more importantly, how they can work for you.
You can learn and you can do some simple stuff, but don't get into anything that's complicated to the point where you're not going to understand it. That's when you talk to a professional like Shanna. What are the best ways to contact you at Heritage Financial?
Go to my website at heritagefinancialaz.com, click on the schedule a consultation button, and I'd be happy to chat.
Shannon, a pleasure as always, and we will talk again soon. Stay safe.
Thanks so much, John.